Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Monday, December 2nd, 2024. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you all had a great week and a great weekend. A happy Thanksgiving this past week to everybody here in the States that celebrates. And I hope that even if you don't, you just had a great Thursday and a great week and a great weekend, as I mentioned. Sorry you're getting this late on a Monday night for this episode, but with good reason. Basically, there was three big wrestling shows yesterday, all that I wanted to include on this episode of the Weekender here. So, we had three shows, ETU, Defy in Progress, and GCW all ran, well, a couple of them ran multiple shows over the weekend, but those three shows all happened on Sunday. Of course, Saturday night we had WWE Survivor Series War Games. I was watching that. I also watched football on Sunday as well. Skol Vikings, my Minnesota Vikings are now 10-2. Love to see it. And, basically, kind of as like a rule of thumb, if there's a GCW event that's on a Sunday night, usually I'll record these on, late on Sunday or the next day on Monday. The reason this is Monday night is, of course, because I had to come back to my shoot job today. I had the last week off, and because of that, I had a lot of work to catch up on today. So, had to work overtime at the shoot job, and now I'm right here to talk some professional wrestling with y'all. So, as I always say, I really appreciate y'all for supporting the show for all these years. I think we're like right at 6-year anniversary, I think. I'd have to double check, but I think we're right around the 6-year anniversary of the show. So thank you to all of the OG listeners and all of the new listeners as well. I appreciate all y'all for allowing me to do this and be a part of Fightful Select for the last 6 years. So it's wild. It's wild it's been that long, but we got a lot of wrestling to talk about, and I had to really narrow it down because there were so many shows this past weekend, and, I just doing my best to kind of cover the stuff that, I feel is the most important, not to, minimize any of the other shows that I'm missing out on, but there was just so many shows, and some stuff that I really need to deep dive on this show with some of the stuff we're covering, because, some of this stuff, especially with GCW, is going to have implications heading into Hammerstein, and Hammerstein is more or less, expected to be the biggest independent wrestling show ever, pretty much, at this point with the hype and them trying to kind of redo some of the wrongs of the initial attempt at Hammerstein, which, to say the least, was controversial. Some people loved it, some people hated it. I was kind of in the middle, but if you want the full review, me and Righteous Reg did a review right after the show. Check that out. That's over on the main Fightful YouTube channel. And it's funny because I'm a part of that. That first hype video for the Hammerstein return, and I've talked about it before, but it's just so funny because I was generally, positive on the show overall. Like I said, I was kind of in the middle, but I really lean more towards, positive. I understand the criticisms, of course, but I said a lot of positive things about GCW in that show during that review. But of course, the clip that they used for the hype video is me reading somebody else's super chat saying that they thought the show was mid. So my voice is all over the advertising for this thing calling GCW mid, which I just think is so funny and just, I don't know if ironic's even the right word. It's just so backwards because of all the support that I'm constantly showing to GCW. And speaking of that, unless plans change, which, life happens, things happen, but the plan is, I do plan to be at GCW at Center Stage in Atlanta. That's coming up this weekend. That's this Saturday. I love those GCW events at Center Stage. And there's a lot of wrestling coming to Center Stage. And there has been some, recently. TNA has run Center Stage recently. MLW. TNA is coming back to run Center Stage, I think, in a week. And there's, another wrestling show, the night before, I want to say. I think also at Center Stage. There was a ton of wrestling in Atlanta and a ton of wrestling out of Center Stage. So, that all said, I there's so much we could talk about and get into this week. Today's episode is going to be a little bit different. I'm going to definitely, I'll deep dive and I'll do the results, the detailed results for all the finishes and everything for the GCW shows. And I'll just kind of pick and choose probably main events and stuff. Cause I know there's just a lot we got to get to. Cause I want to talk about Ricky Starks and the GCW, drama and all that stuff, surrounding Effie and whatnot also, but I'm just probably not going to have the time. So if you want to know more about my thoughts on that, myself and Jeremy Lambert talked about that over on the Spotlight. That's on Fightful Overbooked every Thursday morning. We ran a little late on, this past Thursday cause it was Thanksgiving, but we're usually there 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. The plan is to interview Tim Bosby on the next episode, so please check that out. Tim Bosby is the Action Wrestling World Champion. We talked about him a lot recently on this show. We talked about him on the Spotlight as well. So that should be the interview this week on the Spotlight. And then, of course, me and Jeremy will cover AEW, WWE, Indies, you know, all that good stuff as well. But if you want more of my thoughts on Effie, GCW, Ricky Starks, that'd be the place to check that out. But I might kind of organically talk about some of that stuff depending on how much we deep dive and how much time I've got. So speaking of time, I don't want to take up any more of that on the intro here. But that was a little bit of kind of housekeeping, giving you all kind of a heads up on what's going on right here and on the Spotlight. And of course, you know, as I plan on going to GCW, unless something happens and I can't make it for whatever reason, I always do get some audio interviews there at those GCW shows. So look out for those right here as well on FightfulSelect.com. So that said, let's go through the topics and jump on into it. On this edition of the Weekender, we have results for GCW, You Wouldn't Understand, and Say You Will. So two events from Game Changer Wrestling. Once again, a lot of them have big implications heading into Hammerstein. A lot of big matches were set up. Also got results for two shows worth of ICW NHB. We had No Holds Barred Volume 66 and No Holds Barred Volume 67. So two big ICW NHB shows that were, they took place in the chains. You know, they have different settings for those NHB shows. You know, sometimes they're in chains, sometimes they're out on the beach in the sand, sometimes they're in a pit, sometimes they're in a cage. These were in the chains. We'll talk about all the results from all those death matches from ICW and NHB over the weekend. Also have results for New Texas 6th Anniversary. It is exactly how it sounds, the 6th Anniversary show of New Texas, which is pretty cool because it aligns, you know, right there with, you know, how long I've been doing the Weekender, and we've been covering New Texas for a big chunk of, you know, me doing this show. So definitely looking forward to giving some results for New Texas and also talk about their champion, Stephen Wolf. You know, got a lot to talk about with him and some of the talent involved in New Texas. Also got results for ETU, Expect the Unexpected, Dial It Up. Big main event in this one between Brandon Kirk and WWE ID'd Marcus Mathers, and also some kind of big storyline implications for some of the big stuff they've been doing there at ETU. Also had two shows for Defiant Progress. They had Onslaught, a two-night event. I'll give you all the results for that one as well, a lot of big names involved. And we got some NXT Level Up results to close out today's show. I believe it was three matches. And I'll just kind of tell you winners, losers, and if there's anything left to deep dive, if I got any time, we will do so. So that all said, let's jump right into the results, starting with Game Changer Wrestling. This is GCW, You Wouldn't Understand. This took place on November 29th, live on Triller TV Plus. It's part of the Triller TV package. I am not endorsed or sponsored to tell you to sign up for the monthly package, but, you know, you do get a ton of great wrestling, a ton of great combat sports, a whole bunch of great stuff over there for that monthly package, including all the GCW events. This was from the Roulette Intermedium. And speaking of Roulette, by the way, I mentioned I had the last week off of work, and I'm not endorsing or telling anybody to gamble or anything like that. I'm not making life advice for any of y'all, but I am a grown adult who makes my own money and only affects myself with my monetary decisions. I'm just going to preface everything by saying I played a lot of roulette this past week. I love playing roulette. I was at the casino for a couple days during my my time off work, and I like to go. I mean, I would, if I lived close enough, I would go probably every day, if I'm being completely honest. But because of the time it takes to drive out there, I usually go about like once every month or 2 months. But I just seeing that roulette in that name for the arena reminded me to tell y'all, gamble responsibly. You know, be smart about it if you're going to do it. I'm not endorsing that you do it, but I love playing roulette. Love it, love it, love it. It's like my favorite game. This was from New York City, New York, and these are the results. We have Brandon Kirk over Bam Sullivan in the opener. Finisher was a psycho driver onto a bunch of chairs and a broken door that was in the middle of the ring. And they made a point during this match on commentary. We had Brett Lauderdale on commentary during this one, along with MLJ. They made sure to make a point of talking a lot about how Bam Sullivan deserves a spot on the regular GCW roster, And after the match, Brandon Kirk gave Bam Sullivan his stamp of approval on the microphone. So that's worth mentioning as well, that I would imagine we'll be seeing a lot more of Bam Sullivan going forward. And for good reason. The guy's super talented. He's been around for quite a while now. I'm going to check to see how many years he's been. 9 years. Yeah, that sounds about right. We've been covering him pretty much the whole time I've been doing the Weekender. And, you know, a super talented guy who has been flying not really under the radar. But like, you know, obviously, like, if you know he's been on a lot of people's radars for a while. But he's going to get a lot bigger stage and a lot more eyes on him if he is a regular part of GCW, which sounds like that's going to be the case going forward. After that, we had Brooke Havoc over Zeta Steele. This is a very interesting one. Very great matchup between these two super talented ladies here. Brooke Havoc, I've mentioned a lot. She's trained by Cody Rhodes. You know, she uses, you know, part of Cody's moveset. She uses the Crossroads and that kind of stuff. And Zeta Steele, of course, has been WWE ID'd. So I have no insider information. I know I've been saying it the last few weeks, but just keep your eyes on Brooke Havoc. I could totally see her as being somebody the WWE also probably has their eyes on, considering where she trains, how talented she is. She got a great look, very good in the ring, and innovative. Like, this was a really solid match, and I really like the finish. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see this finish get stolen on a major promotion, because it was a really nice reversal for a pin. So basically what ends up happening is Zeta Steele goes for a, I don't know if you consider going for the move when you see a Casadora, but basically Zeta Steele does a, like, a wheelbarrow to Brooke Havoc, and Brooke goes, like, around the side of Zeta Steele's body and rolls her up in, like, a sunset flip. But it wasn't really a sunset flip because she didn't go over the top. She went to the side. It's really hard to explain without seeing it, but it was super smooth. And as I mentioned, you know, obviously there's a lot of eyes already on Zeta Steele, but I think that Brooke Havoc is somebody y'all definitely got to keep your eyes on. Especially considering Brooke has only been, I know she's Nightmare Factory trained, but she's only been around technically for like 3 years. So, yeah, great stuff there. After that, we had Tony Deppen over Man Like Darice. Man Like Darice wraps his way to the ring as normal, but this match, before it even gets started, Darice is like on the microphone rapping and getting the crowd involved while he's fighting Tony Deppen before the match actually technically starts. As far as the match itself goes, towards the end, Griffin McCoy comes out and distracts Darice, and that allows Tony Deppen to do a schoolboy roll-up and grab the tights for leverage, so Deppen gets to win with the dirty pin. That leads right into the next match, because Griffin McCoy was already out there. McCoy defeats Grim Reefer. There was a lot of joint play in this one. If you're familiar with Grim Reefer, which, you know, I'm a big fan of what he does personally. I think it's super entertaining. It's obviously something that can only be done on, you know, you can't do what he's doing on, like, mainstream wrestling. You just can't. I mean, I think it'd be cool if somebody attempted it, but, you know, we get marijuana references occasionally and some characters that definitely lean, you know, towards that kind of lifestyle, and they heavily imply certain things about their character. Like, for instance, you know, Rob Van Dam is one of the most obvious examples. Matt Riddle, one of the most obvious examples. But you never really saw them in, like, WWE or in AEW or anything like that doing, you know, smoking a joint while they're out there wrestling. But I do respect the talent that it takes to keep that thing lit while you're running around without coughing or, like, you know, blowing it out of your mouth or, you know, accidentally, you know, the thing going out. It's actually pretty impressive to keep that thing going while you're wrestling. And Griffin McCoy does a lot of stuff with the joint as well, so they play off of that a lot during this one. As you see a lot in Grim Reefer's matches, it's a big part of his act, but, you know, I think it works, but once again, I might be niche with when it comes to that. Although the GCW crowd obviously loves it, and Grim Reefer is a legend as far as I'm concerned. Griffin McCoy, someone who is a legend in his own mind, but could become a legend one day, and a guy that I am a very, very big fan on. Y'all know that I'm very high on Griffin McCoy. I just feel like Griffin has just a ton of potential. He's got good size, a good look. He's only to keep getting better. So I love seeing that Griffin is getting more of a push on GCW. He's also been in a somewhat consistent tag team with Kerry Morton, which we'll talk about as well shortly. But Griffin also has been heavily pushed over the last few years in JCW. Jersey Championship Wrestling, not Juggalo Championship Wrestling. But in Jersey Championship Wrestling, he had a great feud with Jordan Oliver. And for those of you who may not know, Griffin McCoy for years was a member of Young, Dumb, and Broke, you know, where Jordan Oliver was essentially the leader of that stable. And Griffin was kind of like one of his right-hand men, kind of like an understudy of his for years, and then broke out, had a, you know, great feud in JCW with Jordan that ultimately culminated with Griffin actually finally winning the feud in a really brutal kind of like street fight. I can't remember the exact technical term for the match. Like, I don't think they called it a death match, but it was like it was like a street fight that was really, really damn good a little while back before Jordan got hurt. Shout out to Jordo, by the way. I can't wait to see Jordan Oliver back, hopefully sooner than later. I mean, I have no idea what his status is, but you know, he was in the GCW Hammerstein promo videos, so hopefully he's around. Even if he can't wrestle, it'd just be good to see him. You know, he's definitely missed, and he's a guy who I feel like when Jordan returns, I could see him definitely getting a big push towards the GCW World Championship. I've been saying that for years, though. I think that he's been ready for that title for a long time now. That said, Griffin McCoy versus Grim Reefer, I haven't even talked about the match. The finish of this one was basically Grim Reefer going for a crossface submission hold while he was smoking the J, and Griffin rakes his eyes to kind of scramble out of it and shifts the weight, so he pins Grim Reefer while Grim Reefer is kind of recovering from the IRA for the three count. After that, we had Matt Tremont over Lou Nixon. The finish of this one was a Death Valley Driver for the 1-2-3. After the match, Tremont put over Nixon. Everyone's been putting over Nixon lately as far as on the microphone before and after matches. You're getting a lot of that on commentary. Similar to what I was talking about with Bam Sullivan at the beginning of the show, you can tell that Lou Nixon is somebody that GCW definitely has their eyes on, and I could definitely see being... It already has pretty much become a regular, but I could see them using Lou Nixon on a, you know, very, very regular basis going forward. Lou is a part of Bloodsport as well, and been popping up a lot of GCW shows, a lot of like deathmatch type events and stuff like that, and has been putting on really good showings and really building the fan base, getting good reactions. And when someone like Matt Tremont puts you over and says that you belong, that's, you know, a massive stamp of endorsement in this world. So I would throw that out there. Just keep your eyes out. I think Lou Nixon is somebody that everyone's going to be seeing and talking about a lot more. After that, we had Alley Catch over Microman, or as MLJ likes to call him, Microman. This one was pretty great the way it started. Basically, the ring bell dings, and Alley Catch just runs over and kicks Microman straight into the bottom turnbuckle. I mean, it was brutal. The finish of this one was a bonsai drop, Yokozuna style, by Alley Catch to Microman for the 1-2-3. I'll talk more about Alley Catch here in a minute. There's a lot going on with Alley Catch, Effie, and Mance Warner that I'll probably save most of that talk to towards like the end of the GCW results. After that, we had Megan Bain versus Pero in a no contest. I forgot to mention that they aired a video of Charles Mason, very Hannibal Lecter vibes, in the back of a cop car, and basically attacks the cops from the cop car and escapes. And he's wearing the same type of jumpsuit that people are wearing in the Hammerstein hype videos and stuff, the orange jumpsuits. And the reason I bring this up now is because Charles Mason winds up attacking Pero and like chokes him out with the chain, and he was biting him and stuff. He bit the officers in the video too. He had like blood all over his mouth and stuff. And as Charles Mason is leaving the ring in the building after attacking Pero, he's just yelling the name Holiday over and over again. So obviously he's targeting Richard Holiday. I'm still interested to see how this whole thing is going to play out, because when this storyline started, and by the way, I'd imagine it's going to be Charles Mason versus Richard Holiday at Hammerstein is my guess. But we had... It's a confusing story because, well, the actual story is easy to follow, but like the heel face dynamic of it has been really confusing. And without talking too long about it, it's interesting because you basically had Pero and Holiday, who were aligned with Mason and basically doing Mason's bidding for a while as like a group. They wind up turning on Mason which gets a big pop from the crowd because Mason was such a dastardly heel, just like a despicable villain, Charles Mason, like the lowest of the scummest of the scum. Like, I mean, and a great in-ring wrestler, by the way, Charles Mason doesn't get enough credit for his in-ring work, but as far as a character, like the worst human being of all time. And so it was a babyface thing to turn on him. And it's just like the way that they did it is more like they narked him out is kind of what is forcing the heel face dynamic to shift. It's just, it's weird because basically Charles Mason gets arrested by the police because Richard Holiday and Pero have told the authorities about Charles Mason murdering somebody. And so he got arrested on the spot from a GCW show, which eventually led to everything I just mentioned. But which was so strange was when they narked him out initially, Pero and Holiday were baby faces because of it. But then they started cutting promos right after about how they were narcs, and the crowd, like, you know, obviously people don't like snitch. I keep calling him narcs. Snitch is probably the better term here. This wasn't like drug related, you know, narc, I guess. So more like a snitch. Trying to get my term straight here, but it was more like a snitch scenario. But the crowd doesn't like snitches, especially GCW crowd. So, you know, basically Charles Mason became a babyface because he was snitched on, and Holiday and Pero were the heels. But you know, Mason is like obviously a heel also, but he's gonna get babyface cheers. But it's kind of heelish to like bite the face off of like police. Well, I don't know. I guess depending on who you ask, it might be a babyface move to bite the face off of a police officer. I don't know. I'm not going to go down that whole path of moral high grounds here when it comes to these storylines. I'm just going to say it's a weird dynamic, but it's good to see Charles Mason finally back. I'm looking forward to a payoff between Mason and Holiday. Like I said, I imagine that happening. It's going to be happening at Hammerstein. After that, we had Luke Jacobs over one called Manders. This was a badass match. This was a banger. Luke Jacobs, really good wrestler out of the UK, someone we don't talk about often enough, but someone I hope is a regular part of GCW going forward, hopefully, because he's super impressive, just like a legit badass, like super believable in everything that he does. Hard hitter, crisp moves, good look. You know, I like what I'm seeing out of Luke Jacobs. And of course, Manders, one of the best in the game, one of the most reliable, the guy putting in maybe the most miles on the road of any wrestler out there, which is like really saying a lot. And yeah, this was a banger of a match. The finish of this one was multiple headbutts by Jacobs and then a Northern Lariat, you know, like the lariat to the back of the head, and it looks stiff as hell. And then he locks in a rear naked choke and it chokes out Manders. Manders does not tap out, but he does lose via submission, technical submission, to Luke Jacobs, ref stoppage. After that, we had Los Desperados, the team of Varez, Azrael, and Gringo Loco over the Spectral Envy, Spectral Envoy, the team of Frightmare, Howl Wicked, and Ultramantis Black. Some real OGs. I remember these guys from like the PWG days, like over a decade ago. I remember like Chuck Taylor and Orange Cassidy and those kind of guys. Specifically, Chuck Taylor cutting like crazy promos on Howl Wicked and stuff a long, long time ago. Feels like a lifetime ago. Nonetheless, the finish of this one was Gringo Loco hitting the base bomb, followed up by a top rope double stomp by Arez for the 1-2-3 for Los Desperados. And the main event of the show, we had the GCW World title on the line. Mance Warner with Broski Jimmy in his corner, defends and retains over Homicide. The finish of this one, towards the end, we saw Jimmy Lloyd eat a cop killer from Homicide when he was trying to interfere. While that was happening, Mance Warner hits Homicide in the head with the title belt, and Homicide kicks out at two. They wind up fighting each other, and Homicide goes for another cop killer. Mance Warner fights out of it, does an eye poke, and then hits an implant DDT for the 1-2-3. Mance Warner retains the GCW title, heading into the next event, which was the next day. GCW Say You Will, also available on Trigger TV Plus. This show took place on December 1st, 2024, at Italia Hall in Chicago, Illinois. And these are the results. We had Griffin McCoy and Kerry Morton over Bang and Matthews, the team of August Matthews and Davey Bang, the former Bang Bros. The finish of this one, right towards the end, the Bang Bros, or I shouldn't keep calling them that, it's not their name anymore, Bang and Matthews hit the Spears Tower. It looks like that might be the end, but there's like distraction from Kerry Morton, who is on the outside of the ring. Bang goes for a sunset flip onto Griffin, but Griffin does the drop-down stack pin and grabs Kerry's arm, who's on the outside of the ring, for extra leverage, and gets the dirty pin, 1-2-3 for McCoy and Morton. After that, we had Manlike Dereese over Brooke Havoc. The finish of this one was Dereese nailing a stiff forearm, followed up with a jumping pile driver for the 1-2-3. After that, we had Sidney Akeem over Zachary Wentz. Finish of this one was Akeem ducking a clothesline, hitting the final act, his double back handspring cutter for the 1-2-3. Akeem versus Iho Del Vikingo is a very highly anticipated matchup for Hammerstein. Of course, Zach Wentz, you know, has been great for a long time member of the Rascals and all that stuff. It was cool seeing him on this show, and the two of these guys had good chemistry. This was a solid, super athletic, you know, back and forth match, but they're really highlighting Akeem, who is still undefeated in GCW. As of right now, at least, I'd imagine that'll stay the case into Hammerstein for the showdown with Vikingo. After that, we had Megan Bain over Shane Mercer. The finish of this one was a choke slam followed up with a tombstone pile driver by the Megasys for the 1-2-3. As y'all know, I've said it for a while now, Megan Bain is super, super impressive. It would be shocking to me if there weren't serious eyes on her in the mainstream. I know that AEW has been interested. I don't know. I mean, AEW's got such a huge roster, right? I'm not necessarily saying that, like, that'd be a good thing for Megan even to wind up there. Obviously, Megan has a strong relationship with Joe Janela. Joe Janela, not really the biggest fan of AEW. I mean, obviously was a part of the original AEW roster, but has been pretty outspoken about certain, you know, AEW things, and is a real face, especially with Nick Gage not being around. I mean, Joe Janela is basically the face, the main face right now of GCW. I think Megan would be a phenomenal fit in the WWE. Like, and I don't know if she even needs to be quote unquote ID'd. Like, I'd put her straight in the Performance Center and have her wrestling on Level Up or the main NXT roster, like, pretty much right away. That's just me personally. But, Megan Bain is a very, very special talent. And people have various prerogatives, right? I don't know who's interested, who isn't, if she is, if other companies are or aren't. I really don't know for sure when it comes to any of this. But it would be, like, there's no way that she's not heavily on people's radars as far as, like, someone they really, really want to get, because her size, her talent, her look, I mean, everything. Like, she checks every box that could be, I'm going to single out WWE here, but she to me, strikes me as just a massive WWE superstar long-term. She got so much potential that's already great at what she's doing, but she has so much untapped potential. I can, you know, there's no way that there aren't serious eyes on her. After that, we had the GCW World Tag Team titles on the line. My favorite tag team in the world, it bounces forever, team of Dominic Greene and Kevin Koo, defend and retain their titles over the Soul Touches, the team of Acid Jazz and Marche Rocket. I remember Marche Rocket all the way back when he was in TNA, back doing, like, X Division matches and stuff, like, 20 years ago. So, and I know he's been doing stuff in the NWA, too. We've covered him, you know, pretty consistently when it comes to the NWA too, but it's just cool seeing him as a part of GCW, even just a little bit. He's just, like, still out there in the game, grinding. The finish of this match was VIF hitting Chase and the Dragon for the 1-2-3 to retain their championships. After the match, basically VIF grabs a microphone. They're talking to the Garbage Daddies. The Garbage Daddies are in the next match. And they are setting up Hammerstein, which I'll talk a little bit more about here in just a second, but the Garbage Daddies initially wanted to get their title match on this show instead of Hammerstein, but of course VIF didn't want to do that because they are the heels. That led into the next match, which was the Garbage Daddies, Cole Radrick and Alec Price, defeating Hot Commodity, the team of Hayden Backlund and Trevor Outlaw. The finish of this one's kind of hard to explain, but basically Radrick and Price are going for their double team, their Doomsday double stomp, and Cole has, I can't remember who he had on his shoulders. I can't remember if it was Trevor or Hayden, but he has one of them on his shoulders, and basically VIF interferes. They like hit Alec Price off the top rope, and we'll just say either Outlaw or Backlund. I just can't remember because I didn't write it down. And I'm a fan of both these guys, by the way. We've actually interviewed Trevor Outlaw on the Spotlight years back. Not even years back, probably within the last year. But Hot Commodity. Anyway, Backlund and Trevor Outlaw, one of the two goes for a victory roll on Cole Radrick from the electric chair position, but Cole winds up reversing the momentum and shifting his weight and doing a small package pin to get the 1-2-3. So VIF's plan to foil the Garbage Daddies winds up backfiring because Cole winds up getting the win anyways. But then VIF really does what they came to do to begin with, which was they attacked the Garbage Daddies right after the match, and they beat down both Cole Radrick and Alec Price, continuing to build up their tag team title match at Hammerstein. I'm really hoping all four of these guys are in Atlanta for Center Stage because they're four of my favorites. You know, all bias showing, I've been a longtime supporter of all four of these guys, especially Dominic Greene and Kevin Koo, because of their ties to Southern Underground Pro in Nashville. But I mean, Cole Radrick came through there back in the day, and I've been aware of Cole for a long time. Of course, Cole is, you know, he's on the spotlight with me and Jeremy more than anybody else. Him and Moe's are our two most frequent guests. And Alec Price is, in my opinion, one of the absolute most talented people in the wrestling world right now, and somebody else that there's no way there aren't eyes on him at the quote-unquote next level. So I hope all these guys are there for a talent, you know, talent perspective for GCW in Center Stage. But on a personal level, I would love to see all four of these guys in person again. If Cole's there, I can pretty much guarantee you that we'll do some audio interview there live. If Alec is around, I'll probably do the same. Kevin Kuhn, Dominic Greene, same thing. I mean, anyone who's available and can talk, I'll definitely try to get you some interviews. But I'm hoping to get I got a picture with VIF the last time that they were at Center Stage, because they actually won the GCW tag team titles at the last Center Stage show in Atlanta. And it was such a cool experience because I've just known these guys for so long at this point. And I walked up to them and I was like, hey, can I get a picture with the champs? And I think I said, how much for a picture with the champs? And they were like, oh, dude, come on in for a picture. And we got this really good photo where they put the tag team titles on my shoulders. And I'm going to get that picture blown up in like an 8x10, and I'm going to bring it to the show. If they're there, I'm going to try to get them to sign it. I love having stuff like that in my office. You know, I'm surrounded by wrestling memorabilia in here, but the most special stuff to me is the stuff, you know, people that I've gotten to interview, people that I'm a fan of, you know, people that, you know, I have some sort of positive relationship within wrestling that I've gotten to do some sort of, you know, work with it to some kind, in my case, usually an interview. So any wrestlers out there that have action figures that I've interviewed, I try to get an action figure signed by them. If they're around, I try to get pictures and stuff, like, cause it's just a cool thing to remember. Cause I know I won't be doing this show my entire life. I know I won't be doing the spotlight my entire life. I mean, it'd be really cool. But I mean, realistically speaking, who knows how long I'll do either of these things, right? And I'll always look back on this time and these memories, and as a lifelong wrestling fan, it's just really cool to be able to collect that kind of stuff from people you've kind of got like a personal relationship with over the years in the wrestling business. So that's a long sentimental way of saying I think the Garbage Daddies are probably going to beat VIF at Hammerstein, and I'm not mad about it. I mean, if someone's got to do it, they're the best team to dethrone them. But I also still want to see Cole Radrick as the GCW champion. He's got that brass ring. After that, we had Matthew Justice over Lou Nixon. The finish of this one was a Death Valley driver on top of a standing trash can. So this was like a trash can that was upright. So really brutal bump here from that DVD. from Justice. After the match, he also puts over Nixon on the microphone, further cementing what I'm talking about. Like, GCW is really pushing the idea of Lou Nixon being a regular part of the roster. Up next, we had Gringo Loco. Oh, by the way, I don't want to forget, Matthew Justice also mentioned after the match that he is going to enter the ladder match at Hammerstein for the GCW Ultraviolent Championship, which he's the perfect fit for that. I think that's great. And I think the ladder match is going to be awesome. Matthew Justice will probably jump off the highest point of the building that they'll let him. But I just got to throw it out there. The GCW Extreme Championship, they need to either do away with, in my opinion, or like combine it with the Ultraviolent Championship at this point, because it's rarely ever seen or defended. Maki Ito has the title, but like hasn't really been wrestling GCW lately. Obviously, he's part of MDK and like heavily aligned with Nick Gage, who isn't a part of the company at the time either right now. And even before Maki Ito, I mean, Joe Janela literally lost the title belt. It wasn't seen for a long time. The best extreme champion in the last handful of years is definitely Cole Radrick, in my opinion, like unquestionably. And it's all bias aside. I think he had by far the most memorable run with that title, but I think they need to combine that with the Ultraviolent Championship. Maybe put that up with the Ultraviolent Championship at Hammerstein. That'd be kind of cool. Have both the title belts up there, kind of like the old IC title ladder match with both those IC title belts up there with Shawn and Razor. But put both of them up there, and the winner, you know, is just the Ultraviolent Championship or champion, and just retire the Extreme Championship at this point, in my opinion. But it'll be cool to see Matthew Justice as a part of that ladder match at Hammerstein. Next match we had was Gringo Loco over Microman. It's a really fun one, as you'd imagine, between these two. The finish of this one was, during the match, Microman had introduced a very small ladder into the ring that he had tried to do some moves off of, and so did Gringo Loco. Microman's standing on the top of this mini ladder, and Gringo spears him through a door in the corner for the 1-2-3. After the match, Gringo Loco calls Microman the best luchador in the world, which is the highest of the highest praise possible. So, you know, massive respect, you know, for Gringo Loco to Microman. And Gringo Loco is somebody, speaking of these center stage shows, I've gotten to interview him multiple times at Atlanta GCW events. So if Gringo Loco is around, I'll try to get an interview with him, and I'll try to remember to ask him his opinions of Microman, because he does obviously speak so incredibly highly of him. And Microman's killing it. Up until pretty recently, he was undefeated in GCW, but taking some L's recently, but I mean, the smallest wrestler on earth and incredibly, incredibly talented. After that, we had Effie over John Wayne Murdoch. The finish of this one was a TKO, like the fireman's carry into the cutter, TKO onto a bunch of open chairs by Effie to JWM to get the 1-2-3. After the match, he gets the microphone and basically calls out Mance Warner and says, I know our match last week was supposed to be my last chance at the GCW world title, but you and your people, you basically keep screwing me out of this, and I want another shot at you, and I want to leave Hammerstein as the champion, is basically the gist of the promo. Also, of course, he alludes to everybody in the wrestling world talking about him. He doesn't mention Ricky Starks by name or Tony Khan by name, but you know, there's a little bit of that tied into it too. I'm not going to have time to deep dive in all that stuff. I haven't even gotten past GCW yet, and I'm almost 40 minutes into the show. But once again, if you want my thoughts on the Ricky Starks, GCW, Tony Khan situation, check out the most recent episode of The Spotlight on Fightful Overbooked. And the main event of this show was the GCW World title on the line. Mance Warner defends and retains over Kylie Rae. Smiley Kylie, one of the biggest baby faces in independent wrestling, but specifically, especially in Chicago, which of course is where the show took place, so she was massively over. Finish of this one was Kylie Rae locking in a crossface. Mance Warner is bleeding, and he's got like blood all over Kylie's hands, so her fingers kind of slip out of the crossface, and Mance Warner shifts the weight and does a pin onto Kylie for the 3 count to retain. After the match, we get a promo where essentially Mance Warner gets a microphone, and it's explained that at Hammerstein, what's going to happen is we're going to get Effie versus Alley Catch, and then the winner in the main event is going to take on Mance Warner for the GCW title. Now, my prediction last week was that they were going to do a triple threat, Effie versus Ali versus Mance for the title. This, I think, makes more sense because you're kind of killing two birds with one stone, and you can also leave some meat on the bone for later. And what I mean by all this is you can do Effie versus Ali catch. I would have Effie beat Ali, and then I would have Effie go on to beat Mance to close out Hammerstein. I also, you know, I wouldn't hate the idea of Cole Roderick coming out and cashing in the brass ring, but I also think that'd probably take away from Effie's moment, and it's a pretty heel thing for Cole to do. But nonetheless, that's kind of a whole other conversation in itself. But you could accomplish a lot here with this, because you can do Effie versus Ali right here on this show, but have it left open to where Ali still has a lot of reason to want to come after Effie and feel like she was, you know, wronged out of this title opportunity. And they obviously have all that history, one another, you know, as Bussy. So I would have Effie defeat Ali Catch, and then I would have Effie go on to beat Mance Warner for the title. And then I would loop back around to Ali versus Effie. I loop back around to that, you know, a little bit down the line as one of Effie's big title feuds. But I fully expect Effie to win the GCW World title at Hammerstein. That's going to do it for all of the GCW results. I'm going to go through... I'm still going to do all the results, but obviously I don't have time to, you know, deep dive everything. As I kind of expected, you know, when we started the show today, I figured that'd probably be the case because there was just so much going on with Game Changer Wrestling this weekend and such big stuff going on for them. Once again, heading into Hammerstein, and I plan on being there this weekend at Center Stage. But let's talk some ICW No Holds Barred. This is volume 66, available on independentwrestling.tv. If you want to go to iwtv.live or independentwrestling.tv and use code FIGHTTALK, FIGHTTALK, all is one word, no spaces, put that in the promo code spot, lets the platform know I sent you their way. I am endorsed / sponsored by them to tell you all that, unlike Triller TV Plus. So I can shamelessly plug, you know, if you want to let them know sending you their way, go ahead and do that over on IWTV. This show took place from Livonia Elks Lodge in Livonia, Michigan, and it was on November 29th. This is, once again, volume 66, and then we'll do the results for volume 67 right after. These were all death matches in the chains, so instead of ropes, we had chains. We had Dr. Redacted over Jeff King, Tommy Vendetta over DBA, J.J. Allen over Bray Wellington, who had Jeeves in their corner, to win the Horror Slam heavyweight title. After that, we had Otis Kogar over Tommy Trainwreck, Hoodfoot over Chuck Stein, who had High Pitch Will in their corner. That one went like 25 minutes also. That was a long hell of a death match right there. And Hoodfoot's one of my favorite death match wrestlers in the world. One of my favorite wrestlers, period, in the world. I've talked about him for years, but... You know, he used to do a lot of paradigm shows that we used to cover a lot. He's great in, like, the UWFI style, but, you know, killing it in the deathmatch style as well. He can really do a bit of everything. And he's a guy who, on the quote-unquote next level, like, I think he would be super, super successful. I don't think he'd obviously be able to do, you know, the deathmatch stuff on, like, AEW or WWE TV or Impact TV. Maybe he'll get away with a little bit more of it on Impact, you know, certain types of matches and stuff. But, he doesn't need to, you know, like, he has a ton of talent to where, like, you know, he's super versatile. He's got a great look. I just feel like Hoodfoot is money. He has been for a while, but I feel like he's really ready to really break out, in my opinion. After that, we had Crazy King over the Bev, Bobby Beverly. And then the main event of the show, we had the ICW American Deathmatch World title on the line. Atticus Kogar defends and retains over Malcolm Monroe III. The finisher of the main event was MM3 tries to come up behind Atticus and strangle him. I think he had like tape or something in his hand. I think it was like tape. It was like a bandana or tape that he tried to use. But Atticus basically fights out of it by hitting the skewers to the dome of MM3 and then hits him with the headlock driver, grabs that same wrist tape or whatever that was, and he wraps it around the neck of Malcolm Monroe III and chokes them out unconscious. So Atticus retains the title. After the match, Otis is in the ring. You see both Kogars together. Otis presents Atticus the title belt. And they leave. But then Hoodfoot, Tommy Vendetta, who are aligned with MM3, come out. And Danny DeMonto, who's, you know, the man in charge of ICW and HB, they all come out and kind of celebrate with MM3 because they had a really great showing in the main event death match. After that, we have ICW No Holds Barred, Volume 67. This was from Logan Square Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. Also available on independentwrestling.tv. This show took place on November 30th, 2024. And these are all death matches as well. These are the results. We had Malcolm Monroe III over Orrin Vyte. Otis Kogar over Larry D. Eric Dillinger over Jimmy Lloyd. Hoodfoot over Kaplan. Lou Nixon over Bobby Beverly. Dr. Redacted over Matthew Justice. And then the main event of the show, we had the ICW American Deathmatch world title on the line. Atticus Kogar defends and retains over Crazy King. The finish of the main event was, I think they call it the Pitch Black Forecast, but Otis Kogar does a last ride at the same time that Atticus does a neckbreaker. The move, this is such like a niche thing to remember, but I'm sure people do remember because it was main event of WrestleMania, very popular main event of WrestleMania. If you remember Daniel Bryan / Bryan Danielson versus Batista versus Randy Orton, Batista and Randy Orton do this move to Danielson through the announce table on the outside. And that's what that move is. So if you can't picture it in your head, what I'm saying here, think of that move. That is the finish of this match. We had the Pitch Black Forecast onto a pile of chairs by Otis and Atticus Kogar, and Atticus pins Crazy King for the 1-2-3 to retain. After the match, Bobby Beverly comes out and attacks both Kogars with chairs and then holds up the ICW American Deathmatch world title, signifying that he is next in line and wants a title shot. You know, the two of them have a lot of history, both members of 440 for a long time. I'm really interested to see what happens with Atticus going forward because, you know, he recently returned to GCW. He attacked Sawyer Rack right after she won the Ultraviolent Championship in her retirement, winning the NGI tournament. And Atticus, of course, still the reigning defending ICW American Deathmatch World Champion. It'd be really cool to see Atticus win the GCW Ultraviolent Championship and hold both titles simultaneously. I feel like there's a lot he can kind of do with that if they want to mix both worlds together. Obviously, GCW and independentwrestling.tv don't have, like, the best relationship. I don't know what it is currently, but historically speaking, y'all can do your research on the whole settlement series and all that. We covered all of that as it was happening. I mean, I was in the middle of a lot of that too, because I got really good friends on both sides and I didn't like being in the middle of that either, but we'll leave that for another conversation for another day. Atticus Kogar, obviously one of the most accomplished deathmatch wrestlers in the world, and he leaves ICW and HB still the deathmatch world champion. But we do know that the Bev is coming soon for a shot at that championship. Moving on, got some quick results for Defiant Progress. They had two shows. This was Onslaught Night 1. The show took place on November 29th. This is also available on Triller TV Plus as a part of the monthly package. This is from the Roulette Intermedium, as I mentioned earlier. Love me some Roulette. I play the number 22, mostly. I play 5, 22, and 34, but with the most money on 22. So, you know, if anyone wants to use my strategy ever, that's what it is. Boom. Just printed y'all some money, but don't go out there and gamble, okay? Don't do it. These are the results for Defiant Progress Onslaught Night 1. Show started off with a tag team match. We had Los Desperados, the team of Perez and Gringo Loco, over the main event team of Midas Black and Jay Lyon. With the Defy Women's World title on the line, and Marina Shafir defends and retains over Alley Catch. Homicide defeats Tate Mayfairs by countout. We had the Progress Protus title on the line. This was Simon Miller defending retains over Dark STG. Really cool seeing Simon Miller as involved as he is. I've always got a lot of respect for Simon. I'm not going to go too deep into this, but I always felt like he got kind of wronged and done dirty whenever the Cultaholic guys left What Culture, and he didn't go with them. And I don't know all the politics behind all of that, but I do have some kind of random insight because I used to work for MMA on Point, and I have a little bit of crossover as far as stuff when it comes. Anyway, I'm not going to get into all that. I felt like Simon Miller always got kind of done dirty by that, but he has stayed strong. He stayed incredibly relevant And he does great work with his reviews, with his videos, and of course, what he's doing as an actual pro wrestler. I really, really, really respect him. I think he's a great guy, positive dude. So, mad respect to Simon Miller. We got the Progress Women's World title on the line. Rio defends and retains over Zeta Steele. And Manlike Doris over Casey Navarro. Mustafa Ali over Cara Noir. And the main event of the show, we had the Progress World title on the line. Luke Jacobs defends and retains over Kevin Knight. And I was mentioning just a moment ago, Luke Jacobs, I really hope to see him more in GCW. He's who defeated Manders at You Wouldn't Understand. But I forgot to mention, of course, you know, the Progress World Champion as well. But super, super talented guy. Great match there. Great show. That leads us into the next set of results for Defiant Progress. This is Onslaught Night 2. Took place on December 1st, 2024 from Talia Hall in Chicago, Illinois. These are the results, also available on Triller TV Plus, of course. We had the Progress Produce Championship on the line. Simon Miller defends and retains over Broski Jimmy. The AAW Tag Team titles on the line. Russ Jones and Schaff defend and retain over Sunshine Machine, combination of Chuck Mambo and TK Cooper. We had Cara Noir over Timothy Thatcher. The Progress Women's World title on the line. Riho defends and retains over Vert Vixen by countout. They have the Defy Tag Team titles on the line. New champions, Los Desperados, Gringo Loco, and Arez, defeat C4, the team of Cody Chun and Guillermo Rosas. So once again, new champions, Loco and Arez. We had Mustafa Ali over Kevin Knight. And the Progress World Championship on the line in the main event, Luke Jacobs defends and retains over Manlike Doris. Moving on, got results for New Texas. This is 6th anniversary. It's available on independentwrestling.tv. Use code FIGHTTALK. The show is from November 29th from the Houston Premier Arena in Houston, Texas. And these are the results. We had Mysterious Q over Chris Nasty and Epi Jr. Mysterious Q, by the way, I've talked about him over the years, especially with, you know, he trained with Booker T. He's got a lot of great matches, especially in, like, the Texas area and that whole scene against guys like Brian Keith. A lot of really talented people out of New Texas and, like, the Loco Wrestling and that whole scene. Especially, like, during the pandemic, Mysterious Q, I thought, was absolutely killing it. Still is doing great work. Has been masked, has been unmasked, you know, really, really talented guy. Great size, very athletic. And that's another one to just keep your eyes on. He's someone I could totally see at that next level, especially with this ID system. I have no idea, but he's a guy that I've kind of had circled since I've known the system exists, because he's got roots in Reality of Wrestling. That's one of the schools that, you know, is tied with the ID system and all that. So just keep your eyes out there for Mysterious Q. We'll talk about him again a little bit later, because he did more on the end of the show. We had Buzzsaw Samuels over Ronan Reyes, Bird Vixen over Charity King, the New Texas Pro Lone Star title on the line. We had Max Heights lose the title to Izzy James. Izzy James is the new champion. We had the New Texas Pro Tag Team titles on the line, team of Just X Nick and Kenny Calypso defend and retain over Toxic Tor, the team of Pac Ortega and Prince Lee, and the dream team of Danny King and Casey Kareem. We had a four-way match where Jay Davis defeats Jack Calloway, The Guardian, and Timber the Great. JJ Blake defeats Jackpot, the New Texas Pro Women's World title on the line. Danny B defends and retains over Lainey Luck. In the main event of the show, the New Texas Pro title on the line, Stephen Wolf defends and retains over Calvin Tankman. The finish of this one was Danny King gets in the ring and low blows Tankman while the referee isn't looking. Stephen Wolf follows up with a high knee to the head and then scoop slams Tankman with a nice show of strength. Follows up with a top rope shooting star press to get the 1-2-3 to retain the title. After the match, Stephen's group, the Pack, the Wolf Pack, they attack Tankman, and Mysterious Q makes the save. So it looks like we're going to be getting Mysterious Q versus Stephen Wolf for the New Texas Championship in the near future. Stephen Wolf, another guy who has been very talented for a very long time. I remember seeing him live years and years ago when I used to drive from Nashville to St. Louis for Glory Pro shows. And I don't remember exactly how this all went down, but I'm almost positive, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but I'm almost positive that around the time of the pandemic, Stephen Wolf had either signed with the WWE or was going to. And like the timing was just awful. And I can't remember the exact specifics and all of that, but he's been really good for a really long time. He's popped up in other, you know, big promotions and stuff over the years, but he's done a great job, you know, carrying this New Texas championship. And, you know, I should cover New Texas on a more regular basis. There's obviously just so much to cover each week, and some stuff just has to kind of take precedent over others. But Stephen Wolf is a guy I've had my eyes on for a very long time now, and has been very talented and deserves his flowers for what he's doing with that New Texas Pro Championship. So shout out to Stephen Wolf, and shout out to Mysterious Q, because I expect their eventual match for the title to be a banger. Moving on, got results for... Oh, last set of results here. No, we got ETU, and then we got NXT Level Up. Two more sets of results. So I did these actually a little bit out of order from what I planned to, but that's okay. We're going to do ETU Dial It Up. This is on independentwrestling.tv. Show took place on December 1st, 2024, out of Ridgefield Park, Knights of Columbus, out of Ridgefield Park, New Jersey. Use code FIGHTTALK at independentwrestling.tv. These are the results for ETU Dial It Up. This is a three-year celebration for the company. We had Gabriel Sky over Jay Bougie, Sam Holloway and Seabass Finn, Becca over Rachel Armstrong, Matt Mikowski over Joseph Alexander, Loser Leaves ETU match, Braden Toon defeats Yo-Yo. Love seeing me some Braden Toon. You know, he's been kind of disappearing from some of the companies we're used to seeing him in, but it's great to see him still as a part of ETU. And Yo-Yo, we were seeing for a while in GCW on a pretty regular basis, so Yo-Yo, you know, really talented guy as well. Great stuff between these two. But Yo-Yo has to leave ETU. We had Contra Unit combination of Kwan and Jinai Kai over GBFs, the team of Aaron Rourke and Becca. Or sorry, this was a no contest between the two teams. We had Mike Santana over Desmond Cole. And the main event of the show, we had the ETU Key to the East title on the line in a Bound by Hate match. This was basically the two competitors tied together by a chain. We had Marcus Mathers defend and retain over Brandon Kirk. The finish of this one was Mathers taking a playbook from Brandon Kirk and hitting a psycho driver on a bunch of open chairs for the 1-2-3 to retain. After the match, a bunch of guys from Kirk's group, like Matt Mikowski, Austin Luke, and others, they come out and they attack Mathers. But this is after Brandon Kirk has put over Marcus Mathers as like a babyface promo, gives him a lot of respect. Obviously, Mathers has been WWE ID'd. Brandon Kirk puts him over, but his group comes out and attacks Mathers. Brandon Kirk fights off Luke Mikowski. Those guys all, you know, they're trying to fight them out of the ring, but they're just outnumbered. And then Santana comes out and makes the save. And the last set of results we've got here is NXT Level Up. The show is available on WWE Network, which is going to be going away very, very soon. RIP to the network. Leave the memories alone. Only three matches here for NXT Level Up. These are the results from November 29th. We had Drake Moreau over Harlem Lewis. The finish of this one was a top rope splash for the 1-2-3. After that, we had Tyra Mae Steele and Layla Diggs over Lainey Reed and Kaylee Armstrong. Finish of this one was a scissor kick, axe kick, whatever you want to call it, from Diggs for the 1-2-3. And the main event of the show, we had Uriah Connors and Kayle Dixon over Dion Lennox and Cutler James. Yes, you heard me right. Connors and Dixon are winners. They're getting dubs now, finally, on NXT Level Up after all this time now of teaming with one another. The finish of this one was Connors hitting James with an enziguri from outside the ring, like up on the ring apron. And Dixon does a schoolboy roll up and grabs the tights. Gets the win. So a huge celebration after this one for Uriah Connors and Kayle Dixon finally getting the win and defeating Dion Lennox and Cutler James. Shout out especially to Uriah Connors, the former Brogan Finley. That's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Please hit the like button here on FightfulSelect.com. Please follow me on X at FightTalk_. Please use code FightTalk and independentwrestling.tv. And please watch the Spotlight every Thursday morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Myself and Jeremy Lambert talk the world of pro wrestling, WWE, AEW, indies, everything in between. And we interview people as well from the world of wrestling. This week, as I mentioned at the top of the show, the plan is to have Tim Bosby, the Action Wrestling World Champion, join us. So please join us as well. That's going to do it for this episode. I'm Steven Jensen. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling and Skull Vikings.